Possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
Susan and Lou Hopkins bet there are a number of you who believe WILL's worth at least 28 cents a day, but for some reason you've never contributed. So to get you to make that move, they'll add $10 to your contribution right now. If the information you get here is worth at least 28 cents a day to you, log on to WILL.UIUC.edu. Contribute $100 or more. The Hopkins will add 10 as their way of saying thanks for becoming a new friend of WILL Urbana. We thank you, too.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in. Assisted living is our topic this afternoon. What are the choices for people in need of an assisted living arrangement and their families? Consumer Reports magazine investigated the current situation for its July issue. Here's how the article begins. Since they started to dot the U.S. landscape in the early 1980s, assisted living facilities have become the best hope of America's seniors for avoiding confinement in a nursing home. Instead of a hospital environment, assisted living promised private apartments and communal dining in hotel-like settings and some help with daily needs, such as dressing and bathing. That's from the July issue of Consumer Reports magazine. So, are assisted living facilities living up to their promise? Well, here are a couple of the magazine's findings. There is no standard for care that should be provided and no clear guidelines to indicate who belongs in assisted living. Most facilities do not provide important information consumers need to make a proper decision, and getting that information can be difficult. So this afternoon, we're going to take a look out over the assisted living landscape and talk about the information needed to make good decisions about assisted living. Two guests join us this afternoon. They are Amanda Walker and Karen Love. Karen Love is the founder and chairperson of the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living. Amanda Walker is an associate editor for Consumer Reports. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion with your questions and comments. Perhaps you have an experience and or some advice you'd like to share with us. We look forward to hearing from you this afternoon. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else in the U.S., call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Karen Love, Amanda Walker, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you.
And Karen Love is on the phone with us this afternoon. Amanda Walker is in a studio at Consumer Reports, and she's talking to us over a high-quality ISDN line. I want to begin with Karen this afternoon. Would you tell us a little bit about your organization, the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living?
Yes, the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living was founded 10 years ago in 1995. Out of concern with the enormous brick-and-mortar growth of the assisted living industry and concern that perhaps providers weren't keeping as much focus on the care attention and needs of its residents. In our 10 years, we have seen providers rise to the challenge and do a much better job in information and disclosure, but still for many providers, they have a ways to go.
Yeah. Now, how was it that you got involved with the assisted living issue yourself?
I had worked in long-term care in many different capacities, starting in high school as a nursing aide in a nursing home. And in the early 90s, I was administrator of the first Sunrise Assisted Living Victorian prototype home. and then went on to run its first large campus community, both in Northern Virginia, and so was at a wonderful vantage point of watching the industry grow. But again, concern over the healthcare needs, the informational needs, and the staff training and development needs. And so we started CCAL as a national advocacy organization to help educate the general public, feeling that if they had more information up front, they would make better, more informed choices before moving in. It's very difficult once you move into a place to make a change. So we felt that if we could give them good upfront information, that that was a good half of the battle.
Yeah. Do you also work with the industry?
We work very closely with the industry, and that is a bit unusual in the long-term care arena. Typically, the advocates have a more polarizing relationship with the industry. CCAL felt from day one that we needed a big tent and felt so strongly that the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging also adopted this, and at their behest, our organization and another one of the provider organizations conducted a two-year national initiative along with 50 other organizations to develop consensus recommendations, another historic opportunity.
Hmm. And now let's bring Amanda Walker into the conversation, Associate Editor for Consumer Reports. Let's begin with some basics. Amanda, can you give us kind of an overview of what Consumer Reports found in its investigation?
Yeah, we worked to look at assisted living a few years back, so we wanted to do kind of an update, as Karen said, as the landscape has changed. So we visited several different facilities. We contacted some of the biggest providers. We talked to advocates such as Karen. She was a great help with the article. And just tried to kind of get a feel for what the industry was like now. How easy is it for consumers to get the information they need to make a good choice? How do they go about doing that? What are the facilities like? How did they vary? That's how we started.
Hmm. Karen, what is assisted living and how does it differ from living in a nursing home?
It's probably easier to answer that question with how it differs. When we had the national initiative to develop consensus recommendations, we literally spent 2 years around the definitional issue. And probably the best way to describe the difference is it does not provide 24-hour skilled nursing care. Now, having said that, it can go from assisted living light, which might be laundry, meals, maybe some transportation support, to a full range where they have highly trained staff and they have sufficient staff to meet much more complex and demanding needs, such as end-of-life hospice support. So it's a wide range of array of services and capabilities, and it also comes in a wide range of shapes and sizes. Assisted living can be, for example, a small home. Often they are specific for individuals with dementia, to very large high-rises.
Hmm. Amanda, Consumer Reports visited a dozen sites in the course of 3 months. Would you tell us about the facilities you visited?
Yeah, as Karen says, we found them to be really just all over the board, from individual homes, old Victorian mansions, to one-floor brick buildings that were individual homes, to complexes that were 7, 8, 9 floors and might house up to 100 or more people, to campus facilities that provide everything from independent living, apartment living, and had a separate assisted living facility and, again, a separate nursing home facility, and would allow residents, as their needs changed, to move from one facility to another if there were availabilities.
Yeah. Karen, this surprised me. There are assisted living facilities for people with dementia. Are they able to provide adequate care for people, especially with advanced dementia?
That's a wonderful question, and I'm glad you asked that, because we find that at least 50% or more of assisted living residents have some level of cognitive impairment. Often these individuals, for example, those who have Alzheimer's, can be healthy in other regards, so So their health care needs are not high, and they certainly may not need 24-hour skilled nursing care, but they need an environment that is safe, protected, has strongly trained staff and enough staff to be able to both engage them and meet their caregiving needs. You want a facility that has outdoor space that, again, is very safe for these kinds of individuals. But assisted living is a wonderful environment. My own father, for example, had Alzheimer's disease and spent his last 5 years in an assisted living. And our family chose one of the smaller homes. It was limited to 8 residents. And we found that the rhythm, the continuity of the staff, the smaller environment where there weren't lots of people coming and going, all that worked very positively to his disease. So again, the underlying criteria is you want to look for a place that's safe, has enough staff, and has properly trained staff to meet those needs.
Mm. What type of resident is best served in assisted living?
Again, it depends on what flavor, if you will, assisted living. There is a lot more autonomy in the industry of assisted living than there is, for example, in nursing homes. Nursing homes, I think a consumer generally has a much more greater understanding of what services they provide. Assisted living is different. It's more like going to a restaurant and seeing what is on the menu. Not everybody serves the same thing. Well, similarly with assisted living. So the upfront work, your time spent in selecting the right facility for you is very, very key, very important. In fact, I liken it to a child selecting the appropriate college and working with their family. Do you want a big campus? Do you want a small campus? Do you want a high-rise? Do you want something smaller? What are your specific interests? Are you a kind of individual who loves interaction with lots of residents? If that's the case, then a very small, quiet home won't be the right fit for you. So all of these are considerations that you want to take the time almost to write out ahead of time so that as you begin your journey to select the right place, then you can make a good match.
Yeah.
So assisted living can be a wonderful environment for a wide array of people. We tend to think just elderly, but it is also a very supportive environment for individuals with disabilities that are younger.
Yeah. So we will find younger people in assisted living facilities.
Yes. In fact, we're seeing more of, especially the smaller communities, that are specializing. For example, maybe communities where individuals have MS, for example, Parkinson's. We certainly see it with Alzheimer's disease, where they're specializing. And that also allows the staff to have the special skills and training that they need to work with this population.
Hmm.
So assisted living is very flexible and can be a wonderful opportunity for somebody who needs more than what the family can provide at home, but yet doesn't need the heavy medical, maybe more institutional type of a nursing home.
Yeah. Well, my mother lived in assisted living for a number of years, and now she's in skilled care. And there were younger people in the assisted living portion of the facility, and they really made a contribution, I think, to the quality of life.
Perfect. So it was a nice blend of different ages coming together in a living community.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Amanda, you know, one of the findings of the Consumer Reports investigation, however, is that the residents are growing older and becoming frail or more frail. So what are assisted living facilities doing to make certain that they can adequately care for residents as they age?
Yeah, more residents are staying in the facilities, doing more, quote-unquote, aging in place. So the facilities are trying to accommodate them. But as you say, the populations are becoming more frail. So they're trying to expand services. We saw floors in some facilities that were strictly geared towards people with dementia and memory problems. So they're building facilities that are different than they were, that can accommodate different kinds of people. And hopefully they're training the staff and providing the proper needs that the residents need. That was one of our concerns, in fact.
Yeah. Are there federal and or state regulations for assisted living facilities?
There are only state regulations for assisted living. There aren't federal regulations. So the states, you know, have a varying degree of oversight. And that's another concern we have. In Illinois, if you want to find, for example, the survey or inspection reports of the facilities, you contact your Department of Public Health. There's actually a division of assisted living, in fact, in Illinois, which is great. And facilities are inspected annually. In other states, they may be inspected only once every 3, 4, even 5 years or more.
Well, that's got to concern the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living.
Absolutely. And we've been raising that flag nonstop for the last couple of years as we're seeing a very troubling trend, and that is that many states are addressing budget shortfalls by cutting back on their oversight and inspection departments. And in fact, Illinois is a perfect example of one of those who dramatically cut back theirs. Another that we have concern about is the state of California, which cut back their oversight to 20% of the facilities in the state each year, and it's done randomly. So it's quite possible that you could operate a facility and never get inspected in the state unless you had some egregious problem that had bubbled to the surface. And why that's especially concerning for our organization is California has the most assisted living facilities than any other state in the nation. They have roughly 6,500 facilities, so it's quite a large number and a troubling trend.
Hmm. Now, how does this differ from how nursing homes are regulated and checked on?
Well, it's part of the reason why there is not federal oversight. There has long been contention and problems among all the different stakeholders over the federal regulations in nursing homes. It's often heard that it is the second or third most heavily regulated industry in America. You hear providers say that the heavy oversight and burden of the regulations limit their capability to do things. Where all of this falls on a scale of accuracy is up in the air. So it has been a reason why there's been a hands-off approach to assisted living, and let's almost do an experiment and see how it works on the state level. Many states are stepping up to the plate and doing an outstanding job. Virginia is one such state. The Washington Post did a series of front-page articles last spring. The state stepped up to the plate, reviewed their assisted living regs. They passed unanimously during the General Assembly, and now they're being integrated. There are a handful of other states that are taking this seriously. We hope that those that are on the lower end of the spectrum will take this more seriously. Otherwise, there is a possibility of there being federal regulations.
Yeah. Well, you know, today, people might be living far apart from one another. So there might be, if part of the family might be living in California, another part of the family might be living in Vermont, in Illinois. Is there a way for a family to look at the various possibilities? Is there a place somewhere where you can go and you can go, okay, here's Vermont's situation. Here's California's situation. Here's Illinois' situation. Because you might want to, you know, you might want to move the family member to the state that's got the best regulation and the best facilities.
I can speak for Consumer Reports and say that we actually contacted the 10 largest providers and asked for information. We explained that we were looking for a relative who lived in their area, and we called facilities all over the United States and asked for specific information that we'd need to make a good decision long distance. We asked for copies of the contract. We asked for staff training and staffing levels. And actually what we ended up, and the cost and all the services they provide. Sometimes, you know, facilities will provide services for one set price. Other times there's a whole kind of a la carte menu. And it depends also on the apartment size you choose, the type of apartment you choose. And we received back mostly a lot of brochures with a lot of peppy-looking seniors having a great time. We did receive some good information from some states that require the states to send out information that includes things like staffing levels and staff training. But for the most part, we did not. We didn't receive really anything that we asked for from other states.
So, and I wanted to applaud, Mandy. I thought you did a phenomenal job in the article with that listing. I think that it sent a very strong message that the type of information consumers are looking for and should be getting is not the information they're necessarily receiving. The bigger, I think, issue is, how do we decide what state? I mean, is it Vermont? Is it Illinois? If we've got relatives living in a number of places. And that is a very difficult question. I think that this is an arena that's very complex and confusing for consumers. There is no one-stop shopping place for them to go. What we recommend, we've run a national helpline for since 1997, and what we recommend when people call is to contact their local area agency on aging. And if, for example, you live in one state and you want to check where perhaps another sibling lives, you can get that information off of an 800 number and call directly to the different area agencies on aging and ask them specifically, you know, what the landscape looks like in their area. One of the items we haven't gotten to, but is another very important area, is affordability.
Right, right. We're going to get there. For sure.
We are going to get there. Karen said one key thing, and that's an area where another sibling perhaps lives. It's a really great idea, if possible, to have the person that goes into assisted living near someone who can monitor their care, because, of course, as time marches on, their condition may change, and you want to be able to monitor the care that they're getting and the facility as well, because, of course, the facility could also change. Staffing could change. The administrator that runs the facility could change.
Yeah. Another thing we're going to get to is health care included, and how is health monitored? A couple of really critical questions, I think. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Assisted living is our topic this afternoon. We have two guests with us this afternoon, Amanda Walker and Karen Love. Amanda Walker is an associate editor for Consumer Reports. Karen Love is the founder and chairperson of the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener now in Champaign-Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi, interesting. Just two comments. One, suppose you get your wish list and everything is well-regulated and nice and so forth. They have pet dogs and so on and so on. What then? It seems that there's a need for some early required courses in education on retirement and nursing home or estate planning, because the news said the governors are crying. They're spending like $100 billion a year on Medicaid for nursing homes. Mostly through Medicaid, and the total bill is $300 billion. The trend can't continue, so private insurance, nice as it is, picks up only about 12% of that. 25% is just what they call out-of-pocket. And item number two is would be nice to have an actual price list, a room list, like a motel. these days, when you walk into an assisted living, they have the menu and the activities posted by the door, but the staff is like mum. They won't talk about prices. It seems that there's several schemes going on, depending on how you're going to pay. Grazie. We'll listen off air.
Okay. Well, here we are at the affordability issue. Lots of issues to talk about.
And I'm glad you raised the question, because it is an enormous question and a little bit perplexing to our organization on why the federal government and states haven't looked at assisted living a little bit more attractively. They have made some migration of moving some residents that don't need that heavy level of care into assisted living, but the numbers and dollars that you mention are enormous. A lot more transition could happen. So we're a little perplexed why they're not using the more affordable nature of assisted living. And I applaud your idea about a price list. Consumers have a tremendous amount of power in this arena, and I would just like to suggest that consumers be more comfortable speaking up and saying, where is that price list? I want to see it.
Yeah. What does assisted living cost? What's the range? It depends, again, on, you know, what flavor you're interested in and how much assistance is provided. But can you give us some kind of ballpark figures for, you know, what it costs? Amanda?
Well, it certainly is all over the place. We saw facilities that were as little as $80 a day. It was a more dormitory-like setting, to places that charged between $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month and up. And again, it depends on how much assistance you need in assisted living and what kind of apartment you choose, what type of living arrangements you set up.
Does the cost...
And I'm sure it varies regionally as well.
Yeah. Does the cost depend on the level of assistance required?
That's very certainly definite. Part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's certainly part of it, as well as whatever accommodations you choose. But more than anything, yeah, I would say it's the level of care you desire. And, of course, over time, I think that's something consumers have to keep in mind up front, is that if you get this price list, and some facilities did present us with one if we asked, but it's not posted, as your caller said, by the front door, as is the activity menu and the menu. But as time goes on and the person you're searching for, their needs change and they may need more assistance, you have to keep in mind that the cost can go up pretty dramatically over time.
Yeah, and those price lists can change as well.
That's
absolutely
true. They can go up every year. Yeah. And, you know, facilities say, well, the cost of living goes up. We have to pay more for our gas and electric, et cetera, and the meals we serve. And that's certainly true, but that's not something they may tell you up front. That's just something you need to be aware of.
Yeah.
And to ask up front, before you make any decisions, how can prices change, under what conditions, how much, all of that should be captured and memorialized in the contract. Mm-hmm. And you should have all of that ahead of time as you're deliberating and considering.
Yeah. What's typically contained in a bare-bones basic plan? You know, help with laundry, I would imagine? And
laundry is a pretty commonly provided. Laundry... three meals a day in assisted living is typical. Your activities, some very basic level of activities. Transportation is usually extra. Many have hair, a beauty salon. That would be extra. Help with medication. That would be extra. Housekeeping is included. That's typically one of the provisions, as is your linens.
Is healthcare?
You certainly want to. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go
you
ahead.
Certainly want to ask how these things are being provided too. I mean, you probably don't think about it ahead of time, but you say housekeeping comes in. They may say once a week or twice a week. Well, what do they do exactly? Do they just do a quick dust up, and empty the trash cans? Do they do a real thorough cleaning? We spoke to one person who agreed that her mother's laundry would be done. You mentioned laundry once a week, And she said her mother was very particular about the way she dressed, always dressed impeccably, cared for her clothes very well. And she came in after she was at the facility after a couple of weeks and found everything she owned was navy blue. And she said she then asked, how is the laundry done? And found out that everything that is collected during the week is put into a bag and they're thrown into the washing machine sometimes together if the bags are small enough. So it's little things like that that you might not think to ask, that you really want to get the details.
Yeah.
That's a great point. And typically all those things that are thrown together are washed at a very high temperature level. And so they may come out not only a one whole color, but a size smaller.
Yeah, yeah. And occasionally you're going to lose stuff.
That's true, too. We also talked to people that said they came in. The same person, in fact, said her mother's closet had three articles of clothing in it at one point, too. So when laundry is done together, sure, things will disappear. So you may want to change where you shop and what you purchase for your parent.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, if you have a lot of dry cleanables, the family really should consider outside arrangements to have those items laundered separately.
And these are the kind of things that you wouldn't necessarily think about, of course, ahead of time, because these decisions are often made after a parent. It's usually made by a child. The shopping is often done by a child after the parent has had some kind of accident or health problem. So there's kind of you're in crisis mode. You need to place them somewhere quickly, and you're upset as well. So it can be a very difficult time, which is why both Karen and Consumer Reports recommend you consider shopping when your parent is beginning to show signs of maybe needing some help and maybe needing this kind of facility soon down the road.
And that way you can include the person who will be the resident in the selection process.
That would be optimum, but I don't want any listeners who are thinking, gee, I can't possibly motivate my mom or my dad to go out and look at places yet. Many people aren't willing to go and even consider it unless there is a crisis. So those adult children, and Amanda's exactly right, they are the typical decision maker. They can go out and start and collect information and begin doing their homework earlier. So if that time does arise, that crisis situation, they are much more prepared to make good decisions.
Yeah. Well, in our family, we call it doing the 411.
Yes, I like that.
And then, but it was when we started, we didn't have the luxury of 411. We were in 911 mode. So it's a good thing to think about ahead of time. Although, you just don't know. And there you are.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
There you are. And assisted living is a new residential option for this generation, so people don't have intuitive knowledge about it. So it does require that 411, getting your information and preparing.
Yeah. Let's talk about let's go back to cost. I want to know, is health care included and how is health monitored? Again, Amanda, we've got a range of things going on here.
Yeah, that's true. Health care, medication administration may be included. It may not. Again, it depends on the facility. And who monitors your care can vary, too. Again, that's something you need to find out ahead of time. You'll want to talk to your state and find out what requirements they have for health care monitoring. Again, it can vary quite a bit.
Yeah.
And the state, I think that's a good point, Mandy. The state really does drive a lot of the choices. For example, who can administer medications? States decide. That's part of their regulatory decision making. There are some states where they allow unlicensed personnel to administer medications and then have a very good training and competency program to support that. And one of those states, for example, is Washington State. And research has shown that licensed nurses have no greater error record than the unlicensed personnel. But you have other states that are very limited, maybe 8 hours of training for a caregiver who has perhaps no healthcare background, and that really isn't sufficient. And you tend to see much more higher error rate in those states.
Yeah. That's also a question to ask. Is the staff qualified? What kind of training have they received? right?
Excellent, yes. And those should be questions. Consumer Report did a wonderful job when they went out and asked questions. That was one of the high things on their list. What kind of staff do you have here? What kind of training do they have? What are their qualifications? And the average consumer, those are questions that they too should feel comfortable in asking. You are literally turning your loved one over to their care. These are very realistic and appropriate kinds of questions to ask. And what are the staffing levels? And not just maybe on the day shift, but what are the staffing levels on, typically they're broken, each day is broken into three shifts, and then the weekends there may be different people coming in and out. Maybe on weekends you've got two 12-hour shifts. But those are all things that, information that you should be very satisfied in understanding and asking about.
Yeah.
And you also want to, I was going to say, you also want to make sure what they say is accurate by visiting at different times. It's a great idea to go in the evenings unannounced and check out the staffing level, see who's there, see who's there on the weekends. Do things seem harried? Are phones ringing off the hook and people not being attended to? That's a pretty good clue that they are understaffed at different times. So you want to be a little cynical. I mean, you want to ask up front, but then you want to kind of check the responses out and make sure they're accurate.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine, Assisted Living, our topic today. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The story, Consumer Reports Investigates Assisted Living, is available free, by the way, at www.consumerreports.org. There you will also find information on how to get state inspection surveys and complaint records. In addition, the editors of Consumer Reports have prepared a list of things to help you find the best assisted living facility for your needs. It is a checklist of 12 steps to finding the right assisted living facility. And if you don't have access to the internet but would like a copy of that checklist, I'll be happy to send it to you in the mail. If you send me a stamped, self-addressed envelope, I'll send you a copy of the checklist. Here's our address, and I'll give the address again a little later. The Afternoon Magazine, WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And the website for Consumer Reports, www.consumerreports.org. Karen, does your organization have a website?
Yes, we do. It's www.ccal.org, and we have a very similar checklist to what the Consumer Reports has developed, and other informational information and tools that consumers and prospective consumers can use to help.
Karen, is there a check in the booklet that you have that consumers can bring with them when they tour facilities? Can they print that out online or get that from you? Because that was a great, handy thing to have with you. You know, when you're visiting all these different places, you want to remember exactly what you saw where. It's like shopping for a home in a way.
Yeah.
So it's great to have. It's great to have the booklet that Karen's got. I used it, in fact, when I visited different facilities.
Yeah.
How
Thank
is that
you.
Available?
But off of the website, you can
great. We
go to our bookstore, and in all fairness, I wanted to say that is not a freebie. That is $12.95, and we also have a video for those who need to see the visual.
Okay, very good. I want to go back to the issue of affordability. What happens to residents in assisted living situations who run out of money?
Well, unlike nursing homes, where the federal government has made the decision that regardless of money, they can remain in nursing home, assisted living does not have that support and criteria. So when someone runs out of money, typically they move, just as if they were living in an apartment and they could no longer afford the apartment, and they might move in with somebody else or family, et cetera. Same type of thing in assisted living. When we talk about the broad array of assisted living, that also includes the assisted living that are on campuses with that are called continuing care retirement communities. and they are often faith-based, and people may move in independent and then move along the spectrum into assisted living. In those situations, there are often scholarship funds where those individuals can stay, and that is one of the special reasons of selecting a community like that.
Hmm. This was something that was interesting to think about when I was reading the article, Amanda, in Consumer Reports, that if you're thinking about purchasing long-term care insurance, you might want to ask, does the policy include assisted living, or is it limited to nursing home care?
Right. Long-term care insurance, generally, frankly, we don't recommend it for most consumers. Mm-hmm. It's a very complicated form of insurance. It's a very expensive form of insurance. Premiums have been known to go up quite a bit unexpectedly as time marches on. You may buy it when you're in your 40s or 50s and be paying for it until your 70s or 80s when you're more likely to need it. And again, during that time, the premiums can go up pretty dramatically. There may be new types of care available. When people first started buying long-term care insurance, assisted living was never a part of the policy because it wasn't available. And then 30, 40 years, if they bought it young, you know, found that maybe that was a preference they wanted to select and could not use the insurance policy to pay for care. So it's definitely something, if you are considering it, that you want to make sure is in the policy. But again, it's very expensive. It's very tricky. You have to qualify. So it's something you want to investigate very, very carefully.
Yeah. One of the findings of your investigation, neither size, decor, nor amenities necessarily determines the quality of care or assistance available. So on a visit, what do you look for?
You want to look, yes, well beyond the chandeliers and the furnishings to see that it's senior-friendly construction. You want to look for grab bars down the hallways. You want to look for non-skid flooring in the bathrooms, for example. You want chairs that are comfortable but provide enough support so that seniors can get in and out easily. They might have two wheels on them, so they can move around pretty easily, but you want solid construction. A real senior-friendly environment. You certainly want it to be clean and well cared for. It just doesn't have to be, you know, fancy fabrics on every chair and tablecloths and flowers everywhere.
Yeah. You also say request the documents you need to help you make a decision. Can you list those documents for us that we want to ask for?
You definitely want to get a copy of the contract. You want to get the most recent survey report. You want to get any type of residence bill of rights that they might have. You want to find out what the costs are and what the different levels of care are. You want to find out and have it spelled out in writing when they may ask your relative to leave and what criteria could someone be asked to move. You certainly want some information about the costs, as Karen mentioned, and when they might go up, under what conditions they might go up.
Do people have rights when it comes to discharge, Karen?
Absolutely. Now, it depends on each state what those discharge criteria are. There are some states that are silent on the issue. We have very much promoted for the assisted living providers to be very clear, even if the state is not clear, but for them to individually be clear about what conditions and circumstances might warrant a change.
Okay.
And to be very clear in that material up front before somebody makes the decision to move in. All too often we've heard on our helpline that this information is not clear, rather cloudy, and then everyone is unhappy when a transition occurs and they're asked to move. Moves are very traumatic. So the more information you have up front, the better off you're going to be. Another area that we see kind of an interesting is when the resident themselves, when the individual who is going to be the resident, when they are looking at the facility, the things that they're looking at are very different often than what the adult child. For example, the resident wants to look at the amenities. What do the menus look like? What are What are my meal options? What times can I come? Who can I sit with? What are the activities? All of those kinds of things. Whereas the adult children are often looking beyond, trying to get beneath things that might create unsettling consequences, such as medication administration. What is the staffing like? Under what conditions and circumstances can I move? So there's some of two different tracks of information going on here, and both are equally important.
Yeah. And before we have to wrap up, Amanda, I wanted you to just briefly talk with us about the geriatric care manager.
Yeah, that's a great resource. That's something I think both Karen and I both recommend people talk to when they're looking for a facility, and you can get the list of the facilities in your area, as we spoke about, but then to talk to someone who is in your community and knows the different facilities, is familiar with them, knows what kind of care they provide, can talk to you about what your the person you're shopping for needs are, and to try and find a facility that matches those needs. So there is a National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, and you can find their organization online at caremanager.org, and they actually have the ability for you to search via zip code, I believe, and find the folks in your area that can help you out.
Okay, very good. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Amanda Walker, Karen Love, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Sure.
Thank
My
you
pleasure.
Very much.
Amanda Walker, Associate Editor for Consumer Reports. Karen Love, the founder and chairperson of the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living. The story Consumer Reports investigates assisted living is available free at the Consumer Reports website. There you'll also find information on how to get state inspection surveys and complaint records. In addition, there is a list of things to help people find the best assisted living facility for their needs. It's a checklist of 12 steps to finding the right assisted living facility. If you don't have access to the internet but would like a copy of the checklist, I'll be happy to send it to you in the mail. If you send me a stamped self-addressed envelope, I'll send you a copy of the checklist. The address, Afternoon Magazine, WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And our guest, Karen Love, of the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living. They also have a website. You'll find them at www.ccal.org. That's the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living. I'm sure if you just put that into your browser, you'll be spirited away quickly to the CCAL website. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 1:53. Settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks very much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade, futures plummeted again in the bean pit. Not so much on the weather forecast, which have turned back to the dry side. We'll talk with Don Day, by the way, of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, a little bit more about that weathercaster. And closing market report, that's at about 2:30 this afternoon. The CMR, the closing market report, by the way, starts at 2:06. At the Board of Trade, though, the weather kind of took a back seat, at least in the bean pit, to the margin calls, which were heavy after last night's limit move or limit down move and the calls that were made yesterday. Guys having to come up with money to hold their positions, probably dropping out of those positions, which meant that futures went a little further down. In fact, almost down the limit again at one point today in the bean pit, but finished down about 30 cents. The Novembers were off at 29.75 today. The nearby July down 27.75. We'll take a complete look at those numbers in a moment. In the wheat pit, futures are off 3.25 today, 3.27.75 was the settlement price for the July. That's the harvest month. The high at $3.30.5, the low at $3.25.5. Once again, that July wheat contract down 3.25 today. September futures, $3.41, the high, the low at $3.35.75, settled $3.38.25, down 2.25. And December contract, $3.53, the high, the low at $3.48.5, settlement price at $3.50.5, a penny and a half lower. And the March futures, $3.63.5, the high, the low at 359.5, settled 362. They were off 1 cent. May contract in the wheat pit. July futures 366.5, the high, the low at 362. Settlement price for the soft red winter wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, $3.66. They were off a half for the day. Now the corn pit. July futures $2.21, the high, the low at 216.25 for the day. Settlement price at $2.18 a bushel. They were off 3. September futures 231, the high, the low at 226. Settlement at 227.75, down 3.5. And December contract 241.5, the high, the low at 236.25, settled 238.5, off 3 cents. March futures 248.5, the high, low at 244.25, settled $2.45.75 for the March corn for next year, 2.75 lower for that 2006 March contract. 06 May contract now 250.75, the high, the low at 247.75, settlement price at $2.49.25, down 1.5. And next year's July contract in the corn pit, $2.53.75, the high, the low at 251, settlement price at 252. They were down 2.25. July oats 153, the high, the low at 148.5, settlement price at 152.5, 1.75 higher for the day. And the September's 159, the high, the low at 54, settlement price at $1.58.5, and they were down 0.5. From the soy complex, July beans 694, the high, low at 650, settled 666.75, down 27.75. August futures 699, the high, the low at 653, settled 671.5, down 26.75. And September futures in the bean pit 705, the high, the low at $6.62. Settlement price at 676.5. They were off 29.5 today. November futures, your harvest month, $7.14 the high. The low at 668. Settled 686. They were down 29.75 today. January futures 717. The high, the low at 671. Settlement price at $6.88, down 30.5. And the March futures 709, the high, the low at 671, settled 681.5, down 27.5. From the bean meal pit, 216, the high for the day for the July contract, the low at 201.50, and the settlement price at $207.10. They were off $8.30 for the day for that July bean meal contract. The August down 8.50 at 208.30, with a high of 217.50. And the low at 203, and July bean oil 24.67, the high, the low at 23.70, settled 24.17, down 35, the August contract down 34 at 24.27. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Mixed day for cattle today, hogs finished lower. August feeder cattle, 110.50, the high 109.50, the low 109.60, the settlement, that down 2.5. September 109.80, the high 108.80, the low, the settlement 109.20, that up 47.5. October 108.40, the high, the low 107.50, the settlement 107.87.5, that up 32.5. June live cattle 83.70, the high 82.60, the low 82.65, the settlement, that up 12.5. August live cattle 81.05, the high 80.02.5, the low, the settlement 80.10, that down 47.5. July lean hog 66.40, the high 64.85, the low, the settlement 65.02.5, that down 155. August 66 even, the high 64.12.5, the low 64.12.5, the settlement, that down $2. October 56.30, the high, the low 54.40, the settlement 54.65, that down 127.5. December lean hogs 54.20, the high 52.45, the low 52.47.5, the settlement, that finishing down 172.5. And July pork belly 60.50, the high, the low 57.50, the settlement 57.70, that down 257.5. The Dow is up 100 points at 10,391. The NASDAQ up 25 at 2070. The S&P 500 10 higher at 1201.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers and planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for community, life sciences, and workplace clients. On the web at www.ratio.